BDNG podcast. My name is Tina McKenzie and I am the Education Development Lead for the BDNG. I hope you enjoy listening to the BDNG podcast and find them beneficial to your practice. These podcasts are sponsored by Amaril. Amaril has no influence over the content of these podcasts. Happy listening.
Hello and welcome to another BDNG episode in conversation with. My name's Emma Button and I'm the Events Education Lead for the BDNG. Today, the BDNG is in conversation with Simone Calvert, who is a clinical nurse specialist at an NHS hospital, and she is here to talk about acne scarring management after medical management. So, Simone, welcome. Can you tell me a little bit about yourself?
Hello, Emma. Thank you for having me. So I am a clinical nurse specialist in inflammatory conditions at a well-known hospital. I have been there now for a year and a half, and I'm really enjoying my time there so far. Previous history about myself, I used to work in the private sector in a well-known skin clinic that treats a multitude of different skin conditions. Before I became a nurse, I was there for 8 years whilst doing my nursing training because I wanted to go into the clinical dermatology world as opposed to the cosmetic dermatology world. I feel like my skills from that area do cross over with what I currently do now, and it really enhances my practice as I'm able to provide lots of information for patients and my colleagues alike in regards to acne treatment management.
Wow, so lots of experience then, you know, and you clearly had a direction that you wanted to go. And I know that you're very valued at the place you do work. So tell me, what do you mainly come across in your acne clinic, in your medical setting? So once they've had their treatment, what are the main things that patients will ask you about?
Generally, it's around scarring treatment. So even when the patients are on their isotretinoin journey, the scarring is predominantly at the forefront of their mind. They can't wait to finish the isotretinoin and get onto scarring treatment. Unfortunately, I have to always be the bearer of bad news because they cannot have any kind of treatments that are invasive for 6 months after they've completed their last dose of isotretinoin due to the skin still being quite vulnerable. We normally discuss different types of options depending on the types of scar. So we know that there's various types of scarring. So we've got atrophic, hypertrophic and keloidal scarring. Atrophic scarring can be divided up into certain subtypes. So we've got ice pick, rolling and boxcar scars. A lot of my patients do tend to have these types of scars, and finding the right treatment options for them can be somewhat difficult. So there are multiple different treatments that they can have. So for example, for rolling scars, which is a type of atrophic scar, patients can have a treatment such as subcision, which is to untether the scar. It's done using a needle or a cannula to free the skin from the fibrous bands. So that can be quite helpful. It's not too invasive. There's minimal downtime. Can be a little bit irritating once they've had that, but there is can be quite a lot of improvement.
And where is that available, that sort of treatment, if you were to need to signpost your patients?
So usually I signpost them to my previous place of work because there are a range of specialist doctors and consultant dermatologists that provide this treatment. I also know consultant dermatologists that have set up their own private establishments to carry out these types of treatment.
Do you always ensure that when you are signposting, it's sort of it's a CQC registered business?
Absolutely, because obviously, as we know, CQC regulate hospitals. So I would never signpost a patient to somewhere that's, you know, high street, even if it was done by a consultant dermatologist. I have to always ensure that it's CQC registered, because these treatments are, some of them are quite invasive, and we're dealing with the face. It's the first thing that people see. And obviously, if things can go wrong, and if they do go wrong, the patients need summer to be able to turn.
Absolutely. And do you find when patients approach you in clinic about acne scarring and management, they have preconceived ideas, or perhaps they've used social media and have in the back of their mind what they thought they would like to do, or things they perhaps tried already against advice to manage it? What sorts of things are you coming across in practice?
So absolutely. So social media being the biggest one, because obviously people post their, you know, what they've had done, where they've had it done. Usually the stories are quite negative in regards to acne treatment as a whole in relation to medication and scarring treatment. But then obviously there are some patients that have seen remarkable results on the social media platforms. But, you know, it's hard to manage expectations when they see that, because they expect that their skin is going to be the same. So when I am...
That must be tricky.
Definitely. And when I am speaking with them, I do explain to them that, you know, there are things called, like, you know, My Face app and Snapchat filters and stuff that can even out the skin. And we don't know if that result is real or not, if we haven't seen the person in real life. So when managing expectations, I do say to them that everybody's skin is different. And obviously when you do go to somebody who's highly experienced in scar management, who actually performs these treatments, they will manage their expectations accordingly. But everybody, like most patients, they can expect their skin to go back to the way it once was. And it's hard to kind of explain that to them, that it may not return the way that it once was prior to them having acne.
And I guess that's quite a lot to deal with, isn't it? And the psychological aspect and the burden of having acne, you know, I think often isn't spoken about enough, you know, and the impact it has on, you know, a person. So that must, you know, be challenging to manage those expectations. So you mentioned with rolling scars, a medical procedure that you could potentially have for as a treatment option. Yep. Could you tell us about some of the other treatment options for types of scarring?
Absolutely. So punch excision is another treatment that's used for scarring. It's done by using a surgical tool. So like a punch biopsy tool that comes in various different sizes. It's done using local anaesthetic, and it removes the indented scar to make a flatter, more linear scar. It can be used on ice pick scars and deep boxcar scars, but also can be used in conjunction with a laser to achieve a better cosmetic outcome.
Guess that leads me on to ask you about, you know, well, you know, we've got some surgical interventions you can have, but often, you know, myself in clinic, I come across patients saying, which laser, what laser should I have? Where can I go? You know, and obviously there's lots of different lasers and management.
There are a few, and it's a minefield out there in, you know, the cosmetic dermatology world, which it's quite hard for patients to navigate. So I'm always pleased to be able to kind of give them the best directions that I can with the knowledge that I have. So CO2 ablative lasers, it's a very good way to improve acne scars. It's according to research, it's the most effective method to help.
Would
with
you scars. Say it's the gold standard?
Definitely, because it can treat a combination of scarring as well. And obviously it goes deep down into the dermis as well, where a lot of the scarring can occur. So it removes layers of the tissue, and it causes vaporization. So basically ablation of the tissue. So it allows the skin surface to improve because of that removal. And it goes all the way down to the reticular dermis of the skin.
And does that run risks for patients having a CO2 laser treatment, do you feel?
It does have a lot of risks. The downtime is quite significant as well. It can be anything between 9 and 14 days of downtime. So patients have to be indoors.
Right.
There is an increased risk of infection as well, because obviously, you know, you're burning off several layers of the skin. So it's best for the patient to be indoors. Obviously, there'll be topical creams that they will have, including creams that have antibiotic in them as well to prevent infection. It can be quite weepy and a little bit messy for patients as well. They will need to have pain relief with that as well, because there will be a lot of swelling afterwards, and sleeping can be quite difficult as well after having that treatment.
So I guess it just highlights the need for that sort of intervention to be of medical, you know, management and managed by those that are registered health professionals with a specialism.
Definitely. And with, you know, with lots of years under their belt, and I always tell patients, when searching for a doctor or consultant with this these levels of skills, to look at their before and afters. Some of them have really good social media pages and really good websites as well, where they actually have videos, they have before and afters, very, very detailed information of how the treatment's carried out and what the patient should expect before, after, and so forth. The beauty of CO2 laser is sometimes patients only need one treatment, which is great.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's like a one and done type of treatment. Around 70%, but sometimes they may need a further follow-up treatment, but overall no more than 2 to 3, generally speaking.
Okay, that's brilliant. So thanks for telling us about the CO2 laser. Are there other options for patients as well, perhaps particularly if they don't want something quite as invasive?
Yes, definitely. So there is microneedling. So microneedling is suited for, again, atrophic scars. There's some evidence in hypertrophic scars, but it's quite limited currently. So microneedling is also called collagen induction therapy, where microneedles are used to traumatize the skin, but in a controlled manner. So it's usually an electronic device, like a pen-shaped device, and then it causes these micro punches to the skin, which trigger fibroblast growth factors, platelet-derived growth factors, and transforming growth factors, and they initiate the body's natural healing response. And it's minimally invasive, and it promotes collagen and elastin synthesis whilst remodeling and smoothing the skin. These types of treatments, you would probably require about 5 on a 4 to 6 weekly basis.
That's exactly what I was going to ask. How much, you know, in terms of commitment, have you, you know, do patients need to how much do they need to commit to the treatment, you know, and how regularly do they need to go for that treatment?
Yes. So, and you can continuously see results afterwards for around up to 18 months afterwards. But obviously, great skincare in conjunction with these types of treatments is always going to be beneficial. With microneedling, obviously, it's something that we can apply topical local anaesthetic on the area, leave that on for around 40 minutes for an hour before initiating the procedure, which is great. Patients leave after about an hour or so. Their skin's a little bit red afterwards, a little bit like sunburn. And that subsidizes quite quickly after about a day or so. And they can put, you know, like a tinted sunscreen on afterwards if they have to return to work and so forth. But patients tend to like having that treatment done on a weekend, like on a Friday evening, where they don't have to do much over the weekend and can return to work normal on Monday.
So in terms of downtime, it's less than some of the laser and surgical options. So in your experience, do you find that patients tend to choose the option, if it's suitable for their scarring, of microneedling first prior to, you know, sort of deeper and deeper interventions?
Absolutely, because sometimes when a patient comes to you with the expectation of, oh, what laser can I have now my medical treatment, once we discuss and talk about it further and the risks and the benefits of all these lasers, they're like, is there something else that I can have? And I'm like, of course, there's multiple things that you can have. And then once we discuss microneedling, and obviously the assessment of the scars is very important as well, because microneedling is great for, you know, your rolling scars and superficial boxcar scars. So once we've discussed and determined the suitability of the scarring, then microneedling is something that I can recommend for them. And once I told them, oh, the downtime is this, you can go to work, you know, the next day if you really wanted to and so forth. That's something that they'd like to try first before committing to anything else.
And with these treatments, so with microneedling, do you tend to find you also prescribe topical treatments for ongoing ongoing care post medical treatment, particularly after having isotretinoin? Do you tend to say, okay, this is what we would recommend, because we've got our nice guidance, you know, CKS, and I know we've got other resources that we like to lean on, like Primary Care Dermatology Society provide some really good information out there. Do you tend to choose different treatments for different patients, or what do you tend to advise?
So generally speaking, after the patients have completed their isotretinoin journey, we often prescribe topical Differin, also known as adapalene, which is a medical grade retinoid, which will help basically in some ways. It's like isotretinoin in a tube because it's, you know, pure vitamin A. It will help to maintain the results that they have achieved from isotretinoin and help to reduce acne formation, and it helps to prevent, you know, additional breakouts, blemishes, clogged pores, helps with the skin cell turnover, because as we know, in acne skin, the skin cell turnover is very rampant. So this will help them continue their post-isotretinoin journey.
And I guess we know that with topical Differin adapalene, it's quite potent in terms of a retinoid. So if they are having sensitivity to that, what would you recommend a patient?
So if they're having sensitivity to Differin, because normally we normally recommend that the patients, once they've completed their isotretinoin 4 weeks after, to start the Differin, start it very, very slowly and titrate up slowly as well. So for example, once a week for the first week, twice weekly, second week, three times a week on the third week, or as tolerated. So for some of my patients, if they can't tolerate it, then literally just do it once a week. And obviously they can use products underneath the Differin. So for example, they can use hyaluronic acid, which is it's a humectant, and it's basically like water for the skin. So it absorbs moisture from the atmosphere and from all the different products. So they could use that as a barrier first before applying the Differin. You know, non-comedogenic skincare is very, very important as well, post-isotretinoin. And obviously using products that don't contain too many oils, using things like salicylic acid washes, that can be beneficial if their skin is too sensitive to use something like Differin. They can use that several evenings per week. So something quite mild and gentle. They can use products like azelaic acid as well, which is not too astringent on the skin also, instead of a Differin type treatment.
And I guess in terms of our dermatology colleagues out there who are currently running isotretinoin or acne nurse-led clinics particularly, have you got any advice for them on managing patients that are very anxious, understandably, post finishing their treatment when you're aiming to discharge them from your service? Do you have any sort of advice for them at all?
Definitely. So there are multiple supportive organisations that can help patients. So for example, there's acne support. There's Changing Faces, that's another organisation that can support patients with acne scarring. Fundamentally, I would say just try and manage the patient's expectations as best as possible. With isotretinoin, we know that it has approximately around an 80% success rate. We do know that there are patients that will need to come back and repeat the treatment again. Normally what I do for follow-up, I know time constraints and obviously NHS waiting lists, it's very, very difficult, but I do try to get my patients back in for a 4 to 6 month follow-up once they've completed their isotretinoin journey and they've taken some differin away with them. Also reminding patients that, your acne has been reduced somewhat, but there isn't anything in the world that's ever going to stop you from getting a spot again. So you may get a pimple here and there, but, good skincare, like I said, non-comedogenic, the use of a topical retinoid, use of active ingredients as well. So, there's things called cosmeceutical skincare that we just touched on briefly. So things like salicylic acid washes, AHAs, which are alpha hydroxy acids as well, that can help the skin. Also, you can go and have, patients can go and have regular skin treatment. So for example, they can have chemical peels as well, like gentle ones, to maintain the results of their skin. So there's so much out there for patients, but I wouldn't want any of my colleagues to feel worried or, that they're not managing their patients' expectations well, because there is a lot of support out there. And once you've built the rapport with your patients, they trust you and they know that, you're going to guide them through the last bit of that journey with them.
Yeah. And I think that's just so important, isn't it? That, we're very fortunate in our clinical roles that where we work, you have the option to see your patient on multiple occasions, yes. Particularly now with the new isotretinoin guidance and, the monitoring, we're having contact with our patients even more. So we have that opportunity to build the rapport, know, and as you said, it's that rapport that helps to guide them through their journey. So I think that's been extremely useful, Simone. I'm sure our listeners will find that very useful as well. So just to touch on that, we talked a bit about types of scarring, some of the medical treatments you can have, laser, microneedling, and obviously we have lots of topicals, and there's other things available also, and support networks as well. I feel like you have so much knowledge, Simone, and your workplace, very, very fortunate to have you and your patients as well. If there was one message you could send to our listeners today, what would that be about post-acne treatment? Do you feel it would be manage expectations?
Yeah, manage expectations. And it is a minefield out there in the cosmetic dermatology world, but encourage your patients to research. If colleagues have some spare time, do some research as well into the cosmetic dermatology field and have a look at the multiple treatment options out there, because there's so much.
That's amazing. Well, thank you, Simone, for taking the time to talk to us today.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode. For further information on the BDNG, visit our website, bdng.org.uk, and watch out for the next BDNG podcast, which is coming soon.